So, there we go. So now is the time for some questions and answers. If there are any questions, if there are any answers. Okay, we've got the microphone. Where's the microphone to go around? Yeah, so people could...
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, do you want to sort of...
Can I go around?
Yeah, go on. Have some exercise. Oops. Did I say the wrong one? No, you have exercise. Okay, come on.
Right.
Yeah.
Could you speak into
it? Yeah, okay, yeah.
It's good for the
recording. Okay.
This is a slightly little topic. What advice would you give to someone who has experienced the jhanas and as a result can't really go back to normal life anymore because they've experienced something that's so much greater than normal life and as a result wants to become a monk but can't because they're an only child and they don't want to upset their parents. But at the same time, they can't go back to normal life because it just doesn't matter anymore because this is so much greater. So they're effectively stuck between two paths and they can't give themselves fully to either path.
Yes. Usually, that if your parents realize you're not happy in that world, being just a person who contributes to their well-being through finances or for being there, you'll find they'll never be happy. If they are financially secure, then become a monk. One of the monks, who's, I think you may know him, Ajahn Vyodhava, his mother was very sick, thought she was dying. So even as a monk, you go and look after them. He thought he'd go and look after them for about, 3 months, and then she'd pass away. But he was so good at looking after her, that it was about 12 years. 12 years. And all the time, as a monk, he was looking after his mum, still keeping his precepts. His brother, who didn't have so much time, would have an account at the different stores so he could get all the food for her. But he would do the washing up and the cleaning and stuff, be there for his mum. And she would never get as much service from a son who was married with kids as a son who was a monk. So it's not an either or. Either you become a monk and you can't look after your parents, or you stay in the world as a layperson and look after them. You can become a monk and look after them. As long as they're financially okay. That challenges you. So, it's time to ordain.
And they won't have grandchildren.
They don't need grandchildren these days. The world is overpopulated. I don't know here in UK, but over in Australia, there's many, many women decide to have fur babies. You know fur babies? Have a dog or a cat. There's so many advantages having a dog or a cat. It's called a fur baby. Because a dog and a cat, you never need to sort of pay expensive school fees for them. They never crash your car when you lend it to them. They never have all these relationship problems when they're teenagers. They never drive you crazy, with all the stuff they get up to. So have fur babies. They're much cheaper. Actually, far cheaper to have a cat or a dog to love, and they're also much more faithful to you. They come, you tell your kids off, and the kid sort of runs away or just messes around. Have you ever told a dog off? You tell a dog, stupid dog, bad dog, you shouldn't have done that. And the dog just looks at you and wags the tail. If only your kids could do that, they'd maybe have kids. So anyway, that's what I would say. Anyway, another question? Oh, it's one over there. Could you... Where's the microphone?
Okay.
Okay. Over there.
Hi. I don't know if this is a question I should ask and what is the teaching of Buddhism in this. But the momentary happy happiness and excitement that we experience, they seem to vacate after a while, as normally. But somehow it seems to be the human system is that, for an example, if we experience a funny joke or something, we laugh. But if we wouldn't laugh at it again and again, it will become quite dull. However, humans seem to gravitate and hold on to certain experience and emotional unhappiness, and they cry into their past experience or something, which I've seen and we all have seen. And I wonder what in Buddhism they say about letting go of that and how to overcome, because most human, as we do that, we seem to ruminate and cry over an experience or something that we left behind, and I don't understand that concept sometimes and why we do that.
Sometimes because we are expected by our culture to cry. When my father died, I never cried, haven't cried since. And I loved him very, 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 very much. Different way of looking at the past. For me, I looked at the past the same way I looked at concerts I used to go to here in London. I think over in Chalk Farm, I remember seeing this concert of this band. It was actually the Jeff Beck group when it was just starting up. The lead singer, actually at that day wasn't very well known. About six people turned up to watch it. The lead singer was Rod Stewart, a private concert from Rod. I saw to Venerable Chanda's great jealousy, the first concert of Led Zeppelin in the Marquee Club, because she was a really good follower of Led Zeppelin, her favourite band, and I saw the very first concert there. All those great concerts, not just rock, classical. And after a great concert, we'd all stand up, shout for more. And the band would carry on, but then time came, the band had to go home. The concert was over. I never ever felt sad or cried at the end of a concert. When my father died, I felt the same. Wonderful concert, thank you so much for 16 years. I felt blessed, grateful, never sad. And sometimes the sadness, the grief, the things we cry about. When I was on a retreat, my own personal retreat, when I came out, even some of the monks were sad. I said, what's going on? Haven't you heard? Well, the visitors were sad. They wanted to come for counselling. Someone had died. Who died? Princess Diana. I was on a retreat at the time. I couldn't understand. Were you related to her? No, it was so sad. She's died. We have a culture of grief while they're celebrating a life. Why cry? I cry when I'm inspired. When I see something beautiful. I cultivate those positive emotions. It's not universal. For 9 years I was in Northeast Thailand, which was an indigenous culture. Westerners hadn't penetrated there much. And I remember some villagers, I was the first Westerner they'd ever seen in the village, let alone being a Western monk. When somebody died, the local monastery was a cremation ground. One, two cremations a week. And you saw the villagers before and afterwards. I never ever saw someone die, someone cry at a funeral. It's a different way of looking at the past. That showed me it was not natural in the sense of everybody feels sad when somebody dies. It's a culturally added response to loss. If you know that when you lose something, you gain something else, it's part of our life, it doesn't mean we're heartless. It means we have a positive attitude to life. When you die, would you want your friends to cry about you? Or to, as they say, celebrate the life? What would you want? We mostly cry about what we think as losses, because we think these things, we have them, we control them, we own them. We don't own. Even the children who come into your life, they're not yours. It's not my son or my daughter. If you have given birth, you know this being who comes into your life comes with history. And not the first time they've experienced life. There's no other explanation for some of the weird stuff which has happened. One of my disciples in Perth, I wish she'd had the mobile phone or somebody to take a photograph of her. Still in the maternity ward, hadn't left hospital yet. Her baby just finished breastfeeding. And after breastfeeding, the baby crawled onto mummy's stomach, crossed the legs in full lotus, one hand over the other, closed the eyes, and for all intents and purposes was meditating. How the heck did the baby learn that? But anyway, sounds weird. That's why the mother told me. And so sometimes the loss of stuff, it challenges our attachments and our idea of ownership and control. That's where the crying comes from, the sadness. The tragedies and losses of life. The crying, helpful. Especially if someone has really hurt you. Maybe they've cheated you, caused you great difficulties. Why do you allow other people to control your happiness? You have a choice. Exercise that choice. They've hurt you once. Every time you think about it, they're hurting you again. You allow yourself to be a victim. The victor is when you refuse, you learn. I am not going to allow you to spoil my happiness and steal my contentment. Stand your ground. Don't allow them to hurt you many times. Cry once, and then enjoy. That really shows the other person, just you're different. I don't know if that answers your questions or what. You agree with it, it doesn't. I say, do you want to come back?
My question was slightly different. Maybe I didn't
okay,
get
okay,
it
yeah.
across very well.
Okay, yeah.
It answers somewhat.
Yeah.
But not everything. My question was a different one. My question was that in human nature, practically, the way nature has built us, we seem to gravitate to certain trauma experience, bad experience more, and seem to dwell on it, but yet we let go of happiness very quickly. And I wonder, in Buddhism, what are the advice and the wisdom around it, and how should human overcome and learn to move on, progress, and regarding the loss that you explained and cultural that I totally understand, also it can be individual and how one could view. Because for an example, my grandmother died, everybody cried in the family. I loved her dearly, but I couldn't cry because I saw her living a wonderful life. And in my view and in my mind, it was that she had an amazing life. She produced kids, she had grandkids, and it was her time to go, and there was nothing for me to be sad about. That made me a bit weird, but that's how I perceived and seen it.
Yeah. So I agree with you there, but I would say it's not human nature, it is what is culturally added on. It's not intrinsic, it's not endemic, that people actually always look at the bad parts of life and just dwell upon the traumas of life. I go to many people's houses and I see, in the old days, photographs on the wall. What you see photographs of is like, you know, the marriage, or the graduation, or the going on holiday. What I've never ever seen on the wall is photographs of doing the assignment or doing the test at the university. You never see when they were sick in hospital. You never see lining up at the airport having your body check. On holiday, yeah. So actually, the photographs, we always keep the positive ones. In your iPhone, you keep the positive photographs. Why do we keep those? Because they're reminders of happy times. But sometimes we get obsessed. Oh, isn't it sad? Isn't it terrible what's happening with Brexit? Is it terrible? I'll tell you the Brexit joke. For those of you who haven't heard it already, many times. If Brexit happens, this country will be Buddhist. You know why? Because the Buddha did advise to be an island unto oneself. Okay, anyway, that's the best you can do. Why do people gravitate to it? Because we are taught to, conditioned to. I do not think it's intrinsic in human nature. If it was intrinsic, it was part of human nature, then you would never be able to let it go. You would just be in denial. Yeah. Can you please, when you ask your questions, all do it on the same side first and then the same side. So poor Venerable Chan doesn't have to start over here and go over there and go over there again. Go on.
I came to see you in hospital when last time you came, and you met my daughter. She's disabled.
Oh yeah.
Remember she came in the chair. I had doubts of like information about what that means for her karma and mine.
Yeah.
And I also have recently been given my son's. He's 8 years old. He's also been diagnosed as autistic.
Yes.
So, what does he mean for his karma? What does he mean for my karma that I have now 2 children with some sort of difficulty, challenges? And touching up a bit on the lady's question,
yes.
How do you, why do you hold on to grief more than happiness? How do you let go of something like that? Because my anxiety, I got a great deal of anxiety and stress, is about the future.
Yeah.
What the future holds for my son more than my eldest daughter, because she's never going to be having to fend for herself in the real world out there. Whereas my son, he is autistic, but he is high functioning autistic.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's, and also he's a very tall boy for his age. He's just 8, but wears about 11-year-old clothes.
Yeah.
So people expect a lot of him. He's very kind, he's very soft, he suffers bullying at school, and he just doesn't defend himself because he says he doesn't want to hurt anything. So I want to guide him in the path that I don't expect him to go to the moon on a bike, but I do want him to be the best he can be, and above all, I want him to be happy with who he is and what he does in life.
Yeah.
But I think I lack the wisdom to take him on that journey, and I don't know how to learn a better way to help him.
Well, I think you will find that you won't take him on any journey. He will take you on the journey. And he will be an amazing teacher for you. And you really start to learn from him just how incredible love can be. And it really, I really get disappointed when people say a person is autistic or a disabled person. It's a person with a disability. A person who's been diagnosed as autistic. Diagnoses, they're just made. Please, any psychologist, psychiatrist here, please rethink this. When you give people a label, it's almost as though they become that label. And there's no way out of it. They're schizophrenic, and they're put on the drugs, and there's no way out. If they're a person who exhibits symptoms of schizophrenia, you realize there's something else in there. They're not an autistic person. They're a person who has special qualities. They're not disabled, they're different. And we celebrate difference. So, little by little, they're going to be your teachers. It's not that you're going to lead them. You're going to find yourself so amazingly blessed to have, it's really hard work. It's going to take up. You can't be lazy with two kids like that. But
four,
especially with those two. But anyway, that you'll find that you'll learn how to love them so much, you'll learn so much from them. But please don't think that you're going to tell them how to live their lives or train them. They will tell you. That's one of the terrible things about feeling that people call you disabled and they tell you what to do and how to do it. It stigmatizes you, takes away your autonomy. And just, as I say, that, you know, because I've been, I'm here to actually to support the Bhikkhuni movement, the Bhikkhuni project. And I said even last night, why do we need bhikkhunis? We got enough monks here? What's the problem, say men? And the problem is that, yeah, we think it's not a problem, but there's no way that as a monk, it doesn't matter how well known and wise you are, to actually realize what the problem is, how it feels to be someone who is not respected, who is seen to be different, who cannot find their place in life, who is somehow disempowered and stigmatized. Now, you know what it feels like being a bhikkhuni? Imagine what that must feel like being someone who's diagnosed with autism. We decide what they need. So, sometimes to be able to give a bit of free rein, as best as possible, protect, but don't be afraid. If ever you see anyone who's autistic, who is, it's wonderful now with Down syndrome, not totally, but so much incredible work has been done. Include them in schools, not give them special classes. Treated them as human beings who've got Down syndrome. There they've got many difficulties, many differences, but incredible strengths. Down syndrome people, they've got incredible sensitivity to an emotional world. Emotionally, they're so intelligent. I found that out when I did a volunteer with Down syndrome friends. When I was a student at university, I did it as just being a goody-goody volunteer. But I just enjoyed their company so much. I learned more from Down syndrome kids at Fulbright Hospital outside of Cambridge than I ever did from having dinner with Nobel laureates. You learn so much. They got special gifts. Disabled?
I don't think he's disabled. I don't see him as disabled.
Good, excellent, yeah.
And I do try to push him to be the best he can be.
Yeah.
And I try to keep him. I am this constant struggle with school. Last year was really hard because their idea of how to handle it is about lowering their standards so that it's easier for him, rather than giving them work and input to bring him up where he can be.
Yeah, it's up to him. That's why it's terrible when people tell you what to do. Even me sometimes. Even when I go travelling, they tell me, have a good flight. I say, no. I'm not going to allow anyone to tell me what to do. May you be happy and well. No. Why are you doing that? It's my free choice to be sick, not to be happy, if I decide to be so. I demand my rights. So these days, when we do like even loving kindness meditation, may all beings be happy and well if they want to, but they don't have to be. I'll be very happy if they're okay with what they are. Liberating people. Because otherwise, it's just like what happened to gay people. You know, it can be cured, you know. We can actually cure it. We can have gay therapy. That is just so gross. They're just telling people, being so arrogant and hurtful as well. So in our world, people are accepted. Is it pretty much time? No, okay. Because the story of the forest. This was, I've said this a couple of times, this is a powerful story, because when I was giving a seminar, not a seminar, a presentation to the clients of the health service, not telling other doctors and psychologists and therapists what to do, but talking to the people who are on the receiving end of this, people who were autistic, people who were Asperger's, ADHD, whatever else you labels they call people. And the reason I like this story and telling it in England is because after the talk, one of the women came up to me and said, I apologize to you, she said, an Australian girl. She said, when I saw you come in with your robes, I thought, please excuse the language, but you'd understand, who is this wanker coming to teach us? And she apologized for telling her best friend that. And she said, during my talk, she cried and she laughed. And the story which hit the nail on the head so powerfully was the story of the forest. You go into a forest and find a perfect tree. They just do not exist. Every tree is bent, crooked, damaged by life. So if you think you don't fit in, if you are autistic, people call you disabled, people call you, you know, got ADHD or whatever it is, you're gay, you're lesbian, queer, whatever. Number one, you belong. You're a tree in the forest. You look at the trees in the forest. None of them is perfect. Number two, if you are really strange, if you are bent and crooked and twisted and your bark, or rather your trunk has got all scars on it, if you are damaged goods, as they say, you will find that you are one of the most beautiful trees in the forest. We went on that little walk this morning, it was in Oxford this morning, and in a park, and we were just looking at the most beautiful trees. It was an oak tree, wasn't it? Chestnut trees. Twisted and gnarled, and it's obviously been through some storms, through some heavy winds. That was the one you photographed. The damaged one. You look at life, go through the forest. Take your kids to the forest. Which trees do you like? The damaged, twisted ones. They're not disabled. They're beautiful. And they belong. They're part of this world. So just like someone who's lesbian or whatever in that, I'm getting tired now, whatever in that LGBTQIA+, they belong. And to try and change them and cure them, that is gross. Imagine that someone tried to cure you. Say, this is who I am. And said, no, no, we can do something about that to fit you in to some idea of, you know, what a person should be. And I think that is the damage. So, tell your kids they're welcome. Take them for a walk in the forest. Which tree do you like? And they'll find it's not the tree which is the perfect one. Maybe that might help. See things differently. Time? Okay, yeah. Okay, so sorry I can't answer more questions because we are out of time and we've got to get out of the joint by 9 o'clock. And so, what time is it? Yeah. Oh, it takes a while to get out. So, again, thank you for listening to all of this and hopefully that it actually met your expectations, especially if you lowered your expectations before you came in. And this is classic Buddhist teachings about sort of loving kindness, compassion, embracing, and non-judging, and just healing. And hopefully that from this you gain something. But don't just gain it, just follow it and practice it. And of course, please look after the bhikkhunis. Sometimes all different areas of life, when females get treated unfairly, that's not good enough. Gays, lesbians, transgenders, people with disability, they're not disabled. Please tell me you've got a person with a disability. You're different, not disabled. You're enabled in other areas. It means that they're not lesser than anybody else on this planet. Especially your high-functioning autistic. He's got amazing things he can do in this life. Let him find out what those amazing things are. And the fact that he doesn't want to hurt anybody. Wow! Yeah, just send him to a monastery, make him a monk, that's where he belongs. Yeah. How do you do that? Just when he's 19, 20, just shave his head and send him over there. Yeah. Anyway, so if this is why we try and take these teachings and really get them out there. So please look after this bhikkhuni, this nun, because she can teach things which I'll never be able to teach. Oh, information outside, if you want any information outside. Anything else? So I'm passionate. Yeah. I'm always passionate about, it's compassionate about whatever I can do to make as much effort as possible to make a difference. Okay, thank you all for coming. And also, thank you for the temple for letting us come in. That's why they closed the temple down. It's a monastery. So that's why we want to really sort of keep on the good side. And just out of compassion for them. So that we can leave the premises by 9 o'clock. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Dove is going to get us a taxi.
Okay.
I just think I'm tired too, and okay. I think it's slippery on the floor.
Okay, I'm all wound up now.
You don't mind though, right?
No, of course
not. You won't for sure.
Yeah, fine.
All right.
Yeah, no trouble at all.
Yeah, we can still get out before.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a bit fresh.
If anyone wants to take a photograph, no need to ask, just click.
All right, let's get out.
I don't know why you want to.
What would be the path to send him off if one day he's very interested?
Let him know the opportunity is there. He has so many paths open to him. Never think when called autistic closes off too many doors. Tell him to break those doors down. Have you ever felt like being a woman with so many things, many doors are closed? You bust them open. Tell him to bust them open.
Thank you.